So, shall we have the question-answer session in English or in French? We're going to do it in French. Thank you very much for this presentation. And thank you for this very in-depth introduction right at the beginning. You talked about the idea of an authentic image. When we started to do this research, we had to address an assumption that we also shared, namely, we initially thought that the students were indoctrinated and brainwashed. We felt that this was systematic. It emerged, however, over and over again that that was not the case. Quite the contrary. Right across all of the generations who went through this film school, there was a real sense of searching for reality and the real. Osama said, talking about beauty and justice the other day, that this was a really crucial aspect. I'd be very interested to hear a little bit more about that from you. On the question of authenticity, and I say this because the notion of authenticity is an extremely problematic concept when you think about Africa. There's been a lengthy debate in African contemporary art about precisely this topic. African contemporary art continues to be viewed through the prism of authenticity, in quotation marks, or non-authenticity, also in quotation marks, of this representation. There is, however, at the same time, also a whole aesthetic vocabulary related to this. Well, the concept of authenticity in cinema is one that's being very much studied at present, also looking at ethnographic cinema. From the 1920s on, this was very fashionable. Nanook of the North was an ethnographic film that had a huge impact in France and elsewhere. Everywhere, there's the idea that various different peoples need to be shown in all of their authenticity, whereas actually Nanook of the North is a staged film. And in making ethnographic films as well, and in the way in which these films are shot, there is an element of staging, of mise-en-scène. In the Soviet Union, various figures were paid, for example, to act out their own lives in film. So the question of authenticity is very problematic. Yesterday, someone said that the distinction between feature film and documentary film is problematic. As soon as you frame an image, there's everything that you leave out of the frame, and that's already a choice in and of itself. So the question of authenticity is really very complex. The whole authenticity discourse is something that many have looked at. African intellectuals have been frequently addressed this, and many profoundly disagreed with this idea. Well, yes, there is this idea of authenticity, which is also nourished by the external gaze, to put it diplomatically, but nonetheless with very fixed ideas about Africa. And as soon as you move idea from these stereotypes and stereotypical images, it said we're no longer actually authentic. Jean Roush has been very much criticized. It's been said that he studied Africans as if they were insects. Sembène criticized Roush for this. Now, some have criticized Sembène for being so critical. Who is looking at whom how to present what. Is authenticity the prerogative only of those who come directly from a particular culture? It's a very complex issue. I was also very interested to think about the immense scale of the Soviet Union. Through cinema, the cultural, intellectual, and territorial administration of the country sought to embrace this vastness. You talked about 160 ethnic communities right across the Soviet Union. You also talked about teams being sent to various corners of the country to train in film. Now, Russia and I, in our project, we're very keen on Sasha Markov because he did the opposite kind of work. Professional filmmakers were sent to Africa, to this vast continent. And it seemed to me as if there was an analogy here. There's the immensity of Africa on the one hand, and on the other hand, the immensity of the Soviet Union. At the same time, the desire to capture this in images. This is what I tried to present in my introduction. There is indeed a parallel between the Soviet Union. There's this enormous ethnic diversity and this desire to represent everybody in their language. Well, let's not talk about language as such. And Eleanor mentioned this yesterday, actually. It's very important to make the films in the national language. This was very important in the Soviet Union from the 1920s. Films were subtitled in Tatar, for example, so that everyone would be able to see films in their own language, even though there was a high degree of illiteracy. And in the 1960s, in Africa, Sam Ben said, we want films in Wolof, in Bambara, not in French. So that's not a new demand. Now, I don't want to monopolize this discussion. I certainly don't want to turn my back to you in a rude fashion. I'd like to open up the debate. Osama.
English?
Yeah.
I would like maybe to correct some information. You said that studying in Geek, you have to make a film 16 millimeters, yeah? Then stage in a studio, then diploma. Mm-hmm. Actually, it was 4 films and not 2 films. And it's a big difference. You should make 16 millimeters, but we have to mention that 16 millimeters, even studying as a director, you have to shoot it yourself without a cameraman, and it tells a lot. Then you have Uchebnaya Rabota, second year. It's a fiction, if you are studying fiction, and it should be in black and white, and it tells a lot about the philosophy of school, black and white. Then you have Kursavaya Rabota, third film. You are free, you have to shoot in colors first time, and you have to adapt from literature. You are free to adapt. You can take poems, you can take from theater, theatrical plays, or Gorky or the other. You can make Gorky a musical Gorky. It was in my course. Musical Gorky Nadny. Come on, how to translate Nadny. And there was a big fight with the administrative staff that, do you have right to make Gorky musical? It was a real fight, and my master, Talankin, again, he was defending this, and the student could make it. Then you have the diploma. The diploma, you are free, totally free. Choose what you want. You can work with Smoktunovsky, with the greatest actors. if they agree, and they FGIG would pay for anybody if they agree to play with you. So you see that it's a logic, it's a philosophy, and it's not two films. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for this more information.
Any more, Valérie? There is a lady here at the front, or I see somebody in the back.
Oui, d'abord, merci beaucoup.
First of all, thank you very much, Gabrielle. I found your presentation extremely clear and interesting. I wanted to ask about your interpretation of the gap that seems to exist. On the one hand, there seemed to be a desire to recognize the other as the bearer of a civilization, cultural heritage, the recognition of this ethnic diversity, and yet, on the other hand, the rejection by Soviet students who seem to have, in a sense, benefited nonetheless from this experience, despite all of the efforts undertaken, despite all of the money that was spent, despite this positive policy. How is it possible that the foreign students at the VGIQ felt so rejected by their peers in many cases? It's a complex question. First of all, there is the contradiction between social reality and the political policy imposed from on high. And of course, I'm generalizing too. Some have very positive memories who are married to Russians. And so others experienced racism as they may have experienced it elsewhere in France, but some experienced it less than they might have done, for example, in France. And this occurs elsewhere too, despite diversity policies. You see this around the world. So there is a contradiction between a political will, which can be authentic, if I may use that term, certainly honest, or not in fact. There's the internationalist issue as well. There's a question of the friendship of peoples. This is something which arose in the 1920s in the Soviet Union. Racism was not just towards Africans, it was also towards people from the Caucasus. So it's a more complex and broader issue. We need to look at such issues with great discretion and caution. The question wasn't addressed to me, but I'd like to add something nonetheless. It is really very difficult to apply an ideology of this kind, or this kind of socio-political program, and to apply that within this context. People often forget the permanent reality that's existed for so many centuries now to this very day, that we really can't manage to shake off that past and that legacy. The rejection of the other, this fear of the other, despite rubbing shoulders day in and day out, is something that exists, unfortunately, despite close cultural, personal, intellectual contacts.
Thank you very much for your talk. I wonder what hopes the Soviet state or VGIG had for these students once they graduated. Did they push them to present their films at particular film festivals? Did they monitor their progress? Things like that.
Yes. No, it's true that... sorry, in French. Oui, c'est vrai.
Yes, the Soviet Union did develop an assistance program, both in terms of training and equipment, and they also offered various platforms and showcases to disseminate the films of these students. They could show them at the film festival that you talked about, the one in Tashkent. There were delegations who went to Tashkent, and numerous students showed their films there, so it was the only public screening. But it was certainly shown in Tashkent. Let me add something. We've had conversations. Russia and I talked, in fact, with various different foreign students who formerly studied at the VGIK. There is a real sense of bitterness. Immediately after their course, they felt immediately entirely abandoned. They felt there wasn't any follow-up. They felt it was disappointing they weren't invited back to Soviet Union. So that is really the reality, and in a sense that does dovetail with what we heard about the situation in social terms and how the social reality is different from the political ambitions and aspirations. I have to say, unfortunately, that it was in the contract right from the outset. It was in the contract which the students signed that they would return to their country of origin after the end of their course. Yes, those who had careers, for example. Numerous former students had outstanding careers, but those careers never seemed to interest Russia subsequently. Some were invited. Semben Usmen was invited to almost all of the Moscow Film Festival's sessions. Comments off mic. There are some intellectual figures, militant figures, who were regularly invited, but there wasn't a policy of particularly promoting these students or follow-up for their careers. That would be somewhat more moderate in my comments, though. Some were regularly invited to Tashkent, and that was an important place for them. I wouldn't be as radical in my comments. Well, it's not a question of being radical or not. I just wanted to add this into the mix, too. There's various different strata of the narrative, and we need to add all of the strata of this overarching narrative. We do have a little more time left. Perhaps we could have one or two questions. The lady there and the gentleman at the back. Apparently the gentleman at the back has been waiting for a long time.
I was curious about the process of entering the schools, because you said that the l'année préparatoire, that they only decided to what they want to do in that year. So how did the students were selected from the countries that they came from to enter? Like, what was the process to get the scholarship from the beginning?
Right, at the outset, but this wasn't specifically with reference to cinema. Grants were awarded either because there was an agreement between the Soviet Union and the country in question as to the number of grants to be awarded to a particular number of students per year. And then there were also agreements between the Soviet Union and political parties, either the government or the opposition parties. In some cases, there were individual grants or scholarships awarded. In these cases, it wasn't so much in the VGIK, but it was rather to carry out an internship in a studio. Comments off mic. Yeah, in the countries of origin is the answer. It was often because an individual was close to a political party, either the government party or an opposition party, or maybe you knew somebody in the party without necessarily being terribly engaged or militant, but you had some kind of connection with political figures in the country. And yes, of course, there are also countries that weren't necessarily socialist, but which nonetheless had cooperation and education agreements with the Soviet Union. And they carried out their own selection system. Sometimes it was merit-based, sometimes it was based on results in final school exams. Certainly in Africa, and certainly in French-speaking Africa, you didn't, by the way, have to have your school leaving exam to obtain one of these grants. And there were also film clubs, and where there were film clubs, Abdel Rahman, for example, told me that it was through a film club in a cultural center that he became involved in all of this. It was the Russian Cultural Center. Comments off mic. Yes, after the first year, which the students learned Russian, they had to do an entrance exam to be admitted to the VGIK. The door was not open to all at the VGIK, certainly. One last question, and that will be that. Was there somebody there at the back? Otherwise, the lady at the front. Please do speak into a microphone, though. Yes, I just wanted to add, vis-à-vis Guinea, for example, that the first round of filmmakers did have to have their school leaving exam. There weren't so many people who had the school leaving exam, but that was the point of departure for the grant or scholarship. It wasn't just for filmmakers, it was for all disciplines. And there weren't so terribly many people who had their school leaving exam at that point in time. Yes, every country had its own specific selection policy. In some countries, a school leaving exam was the requirement. Some had already studied in Paris. Costian had studied journalism in Paris before coming to Morocco, and other countries, Morocco, for example, school leaving exam was not a prerequisite to go to Moscow. It depended on the country in question. I think that also changed from, say, the 60s to the 80s. I believe that the preconditions really changed. Thank you very, very much for that fascinating presentation, Gabrielle.